We are officially at quorum, so we will get started here. Representative Newton, do you want to move the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the minutes.
After much deliberation, Representative Newton moves the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are passed. We're going to take a look at House File 1665, and the chair recommends this bill to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. How are you doing, Representative Swales?
I'm just grand.
Good, good. Well, go ahead and let us know about your bill.
Members and Mr. Chair, thank you so much for being so wide awake and alert this morning. I think that last night I was about ready to call it a slumber party with about 30 of my favorite friends. So quite the evening. But Representative McFarland and I are here this morning with a bill that we are particularly proud of and the effort that has gone into this. This is a bill related to shared services and efficiency. It is not the same bill that was traveling through the Senate that was defeated this week. This is a bill that has a different direction and has had a different way of coming to what I feel is going to be very wonderful policy for the state. Representative McFarland and I co-chaired a work group on shared services, and about 6 weeks ago we had our first meeting with a handful of folks, and over the course of the four or five meetings that we had, the attendance at these meetings grew and grew. At one meeting, I think we were between 30 and 40 individuals who were in attendance. The outpouring of support from stakeholders across the state has been just amazing for us. During the course of the work group, we focused on some strands that I think are particularly strong areas where cooperation between different services can happen. The first one that we looked at was it was related to nutrition. And in the packet, you have some information about the Nutrition Association or cooperative. I don't even know what you would call it. It's not a cooperative, but it's a purchasing group. And it is housed out of Anoka-Hennepin School District. And it was something that was what we would call in politics totally grassroots. They came together with other districts and said, how can we purchase the things that we need for food services in a much more cost-effective manner? It grew to the point where today there are 77 school districts all the way from Moorhead down to the most southern counties in Minnesota that are a part of this purchasing group. And you can see there's a handout in there that talks about the Anoka-Hennepin district, and it just gives one product, I believe, and it shows how that product is, they have been able to reduce that cost because of this joint purchasing throughout the 77 school districts. Another strand that we worked on was IT. There is a lot of work being done in that area, and the state of Wyoming has gone to what is called a SIF program, and I cannot pronounce the word, even though I'm an English teacher, but I have too many syllables that I believe it's a interoperability framework and for services. And the state of Wyoming has saved in the tens of millions of dollars. It's a horizontal sharing system with individual silos for districts, but the horizontal is interesting because a student is given a common identifier, so if that student should move anywhere in the state of Wyoming, all of the transcripts, all of the data about this young person would travel to the new school, so there would be much less paper being sent to the mail, a much reduced cost. The reporting mechanism to the Department of Ed is very, very easy. All test scores immediately go. They are stored. It's just a much more streamlined method of doing things. PIES is an organization that has an IT program that they share with their member districts. The Department of Education, under the leadership of John Polson, who is their IT person, is developing The basic framework persists in our state, along with Patrick Plant from Anokahennepin. Anokahennepin, and Denise is not here, but there you are, seems to be the leader in a lot of these innovations, and I cannot be more impressed with what you're doing in the school district, and we're really excited about that as well. The next meeting that we held had to do with transportation, and we are very interested in trying to make that a huge efficiency. We learned a lot of things from our transportation meeting, and Carol, Representative McFarland, had a colleague that she worked with in the White Bear Schools who has now become an independent consultant in the area of transportation, and Carol can speak to that more in a moment. But what we learned from this is that there are routing systems that can be used. In the state of North Carolina, they have one common routing system so that buses do not crisscross inefficiently, that they are able to pick up students. We found that there are some obstacles in the state of Minnesota that gets in the way of that. First of all, we don't have a common calendar among school districts. And second, we have open enrollment. So that complicates things, but it is not an insurmountable obstacle. It is something that we feel that could be utilized more efficiently in the state by having perhaps neighboring districts decide on a common calendar, decide on a routing system so that we can move students around more efficiently. And then we also had a meeting related to, we went to on a tour of TIES and had an electronic tour where we saw all the kinds of things that TIES is able to do, and I believe there's a representative there from TIES. And the best part of our time together was we went on a field trip to Marshall, Minnesota. And that was last Friday. I drove, and Representative McFarland was a very good co-pilot. And we went down to Marshall, and we met with 30 superintendents who are a part of the Southwest Service Cooperative and saw the excellent best practices that are being used in that particular portion of the state. This is a gigantic geographical area. And going down and meeting these 30 superintendents, seeing the excellent cooperation that is in existence in that cooperative, is a best practice for the rest of the state to model. There are lots of things that could be learned from this experience, and what we have done is designed a bill that will put, and this is so exciting, the first time in 100 and almost 51 years of statehood, the word wiki will appear in legislation. But we are very excited about the opportunity that we have had to work with the state auditor. And it is under the purview of the state auditor's office that there is already in legislation a section that deals with providing best practices for the state of Minnesota. And in our work with the state auditor, who is supportive of this bill and would be here speaking to it this morning if she were not engaged elsewhere, she is wanting to assist us in housing this particular site, which will become a website of best practices that all school districts in the state will have access to. And I will kind of leave it there. Carol can explain, or Representative. Friendship really, we've become very familiar with one another. That 4-hour drive to Marshall really bonded us. But it really is something that we're excited about, and Representative McFarland can explain the bill to you. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we were really looking for was a common sense tool for people to use that was not mandated. We know that our school boards and our school administration want to be good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, and they already are. We just need to give them the tools to make them more efficient and learn what other best practices and best evidence-based practices are happening across the state. This is a tool for them to be able to do that. You're probably wondering what a wiki is. I will explain that. Wikis are often used to create collaborative websites and to power community websites. In California, when we met with Commissioner Dana Bajorel from the Department of Administration, she introduced us to some of the best practices that are already happening with shared services across the country. And it led me to looking at the California Best Practices Center, which is a wiki. I don't normally like to follow California's lead, but we know also that we all have to take advantage of good ideas that other people have and manipulate them to work to our advantage, and so that's what we're looking at. The purpose of the Best Practices Center are to improve the effectiveness of government by sharing proven best practices. It enables agencies to learn about, adapt, apply tools and processes that have worked in other settings. It builds on the willingness to share with each other by providing an online resource that supports collaboration, speeds communication, and reduces silos. Each entity is responsible for keeping their information current, and that's the best part of it. It's not a high-maintenance type of a situation. It's a connecting piece. The common theme that we really heard, because there are so many cooperatives already happening around the state, shared services, and we're not just talking about purchasing. I think sometimes people think it's only about our purchasing power. We already have a state cooperative purchasing group. I'm suggesting that that be part of this wiki where people would be connected to them to know about that service. But the other part is the shared services and the skill sets that we should be sharing with other districts and across different political units, too. And there's so much evidence of this already happening. You know, life leads you on to all kinds of different things. Through our journey on this in the past 6 weeks, everybody led us to somebody else, and we've really been trying to work hard, and we still have some work to do on this to be ready for the financial part in next week's meeting. But I happened to run into Ted Lilly, who's a former president or chair of the St. Paul Chamber. And he says, Carol, did you know that we have been doing research for the past 5 to 6 years on shared services within our area? And you all have at your desk this piece of material. We don't have too many copies, so there's not extras for the audience, I hate to say. But if you open this up, you will see all the cities within Ramsey County, the county itself, and on the back side there is some of the school districts within. And it's very hard to read because there's so much information to show you that there are many shared services already happening. We need to share this news with other people. This is what we're trying to do, is have a vehicle or a tool for people to know about this. He also commented about, was I aware of the state auditor's reports in 2004 and 2005 on best practices review? The first one was cooperative efforts in public service delivery, and the second was contracting for services and procurement. Research has been done already. It's already part of the auditor's department. We also, TIES was very kind to do a report and to survey all the districts in the state and charter schools, and they got, 75% return on that. And you have some copies of a few of the pages that are in their report of services that are already happening with our intermediate school districts, our cooperatives, across government lines. And so we're looking at all this, and we're saying, this is really good, but why are we keeping the secret locally with people? We need to have a place where people can go and see what is happening across the state. Let's see. I could go on and on. But I guess that's the essence of it, and we do have some testifiers, too, that would like to speak to this. I think we should let our testifiers speak, and then we'll...
Absolutely, I think that's great. You can bring them down, and if they'd state their name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lee Warren. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. The concept of shared services isn't, as you know, anything particularly new. As a school superintendent, I did school combinations and so learned about the cooperation that happens that way. I did run a service cooperative for a number of years and did a number of aggregated purchasing, co-op purchasing, but we also did an awful lot of what I would define as shared services. The term kind of needs, I think, a little bit of clarification, because to me it breaks down into two components. The first, which is talked about a lot, is aggregated buying or cooperative purchasing. And we, I think, are relatively all accept the concept if you can get a large volume, you can negotiate a pretty good price or get a pretty decent bid on it. The second part of shared services is the part that was talked about in the introduction of the bill just a little while ago, and that's the sharing of people or expertise. And there's a lot of that going on. I don't really need a full-time server specialist, but my next-door neighbor's got one, so I can share that. Those things aren't on the books anywhere, but they're done all over. So I would define shared services in two different ways. We've got 150 MREA members around the state, and so I get to drive all over. And it's really fun because I get to see a lot, and I learn a lot. In the last week, I wanted to share a couple of things that I just came across because I was in I live in Marshall, and I was at the meeting last Friday. I learned something new there. I was in Fergus Falls and I was in Nashwauk Tuesday night. Up in around Grand Rapids, there's a whole bunch of school districts that are talking together about putting their back office operations together, how they could go about sharing the kinds of activities that you know are not directly related. Are not direct service to the classroom, but certainly are needed, that very well could end up saving a lot of money that can be then used in the classroom. Out in the west central part of the state, there are about 20 or more districts that have are in the process of adopting a common calendar with a common daily schedule. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a major initiative for districts to do that. But what it does is it lays the foundation for major kinds of opportunities to exist, whether that's sharing classes, sharing people, all kinds of things. The west central part of the state, and I found this one out a day ago too, there are regional centers, Detroit Lakes, Fergus Falls, I believe Moorhead's part of the discussion, are sitting down to talk about bringing in a nutritional specialist to devise, work with the districts to devise menus for kids that are, you know, very nutritious and helpful, but allows them to buy locally as well, and then aggregate all those purchases. So they kill a whole bunch of birds with one stone. That's what I found out just in the last week. Last night, right now, all the state superintendents are gathering together for their spring conference, and I was there last night and didn't get in until a little bit later, so I went down to have supper about 9 o'clock, and the superintendents were hanging around. We were talking back and forth, and it was really kind of fun. I was sitting there kind of eating and watching, and what was happening was, besides the sharing of war stories and being able to walk away saying, well, somebody else has it worse than I do, they were sharing ideas. And I heard one of them, I don't even know what they were talking about. I goes, man, that's a great idea. Thank you. Can I use that? And I think what happens during those kinds of gatherings, and it happens legislatively, it happens among any kind of speciality, is that the sharing ideas, they almost go viral, kind of like a YouTube video. If a good idea gets laid out there and you share it with somebody else and they share it with somebody else, those are terribly important, and then they happen all the time in education. I think the idea of having some place to go to put this information so that anybody can go look to find out, you know, maybe I should be buying off of the state, the food group or the Department of Admin, or perhaps there's somebody else who's already reinvented the wheel I'm trying to, you know, do. It exists, and there's a place for it. Today there isn't a logical transition. House Bill 1665 creates that opportunity for these ideas to be brought together and a chance for them to go viral. And MREA completely supports this effort, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director at Southwest Central Service Cooperative in Marshall. And I want to say publicly a thanks to Representative Swales and McFarland for visiting our center last Friday. We had a very good meeting. In fact, some of our members commented at the end that they felt that this is one of the first times they've been heard, and we appreciate that. The other thing I might add, if I could be so bold, is my 15-year-old daughter would probably say at high time that there's a wiki bill coming out of St. Paul. That and YouTube and the same testimony, you know, that times have changed. So. As one of nine service cooperatives, Southwest Central is an excellent example of what we think is best practices in shared services. We're collaborative, we're innovative, and we're efficient. More importantly, though, I think, is we provide access to programs and services that our members would not have access to if we didn't provide them. As you know, service cooperatives are enabled in statute. However, as a public agency, Southwest Essential Service Cooperative has no taxing authority. We receive no direct appropriation from the state, and none of our programs are mandated, so none of our members have to participate. We think that's unique. Our service cooperative serves 59 public schools, 14 non-publics and charters, in 18 counties of southwest and west central Minnesota. From about Ortonville to Lester Prairie, Glencoe, Silver Lake, down to Jackson, we serve all of those schools and city counties and other government agencies in that area. All of our programs and services qualify as a shared service example. I think there are a number of service providers. If you look at the TIDES information, you'll see the Regional Management Information Centers, you'll see intermediate districts, you'll see special ed co-ops, you'll see service cooperatives. There are a number of providers in the state. We believe that Southwest Central is a little bit different than those. We are a regional management information center. We have, in our RMIC, 58 member schools participate in sharing payroll and finance services. Currently, we've partnered with TIDES so that our students, so we have access to student system and data warehousing services for our members. Our cooperative purchasing program, which from food, paper, to cars, is not only regional, but we have a statewide collaborative and we have a multi-state collaborative that we participate in as a part of our purchasing program. Southwest Essential is a special ed cooperative or an intermediate district. 48 of our schools share special education director and direct services staff. What I mean by that is we have 4 special ed directors that we hire, and those schools in our region share those services in a combined way. And then we hire direct services staff like school psychologists, speech language pathologists, occupational therapists, and so on, that basically get in cars and drive around and serve those schools. I talked about innovation a little bit. We just started up a year or so ago what we think is an innovative practice in speech language pathology. Very hard to find and hire these folks, and we have a telemedicine practice that we're doing now so that our speech language pathologists can deliver services anywhere in our region, frankly, to do it anywhere in the state, anywhere in the country. It doesn't work for all students who have speech language disabilities, but it does work for a number of them, and it works very well, creating additional efficiencies. Southwest Essential is a telecommunications cluster. 32 of our school districts have participated in what we call the Trillion Project. The Trillion Project is a wide area network that we've co-opted with a third-party vendor or a private vendor to provide wide area network access. And so we do E-rate coordination, we do ICD interactive television coordination with those 32 school districts. One of the things we've done under our telecommunications services, again, that is a growing service, is we have 5 full-time equivalent tech coordinators. And so just like the school psychologist, the speech language pathologist, we also provide tech coordination services to our districts under our telecommunications work. Southwest Essential is an education district. We share curriculum coordination. We share assessment and instructional practices. We do shared professional development. A year ago, this last fall, we had a shared teaching and learning conference. We had over 1,500 of our rural school teachers participate in a shared teaching and learning conference that was hugely successful. One of the challenges having this coming year is we don't know when school is going to start. Some of our schools would like to start before Labor Day, and so we're challenged with when we could schedule that. I slide that in there, okay? So it creates some challenges for us. One of the things that we talk about with our board quite often is we had nearly 25,000 students participate in what we call student activities, knowledge bowl, major conferences, extra academic activities that those students wouldn't have access to without our shared services program. We also are a school district. We administer an area learning center out of our Wyndham office where we have a number of students. So we have a setting 4 special ed program there and a day treatment program. Finally, I think we're also a health insurance provider. 95% of our schools, the schools in our region, purchase health insurance from our school insurance pool. In fact, I might be so bold as to say we believe that's one of our most successful shared services projects. It's non-mandatory, and it does provide a great service. The unique thing about our service agencies, all of these services are provided under one government structure and one administrative structure. And so we share in that as well. We're not alone. There are a number of shared service providers across the state. We believe, Southwest Essential Service Providers believes, the information sharing and best practices that is provided by this bill will allow us, our agency, to share our best practices as well as learn and grow and better serve our members. With that, I would say thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Goslin, and I represent a number of different educational organizations here today. I represent the Intermediate School District, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, as well as the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. And we would like to thank Representative McFarland and Representative Swales for their very hard work on this legislation, and it's something that we all very broadly support. As you have heard, there's a lot of really good examples of what school districts are doing now. We appreciate their approach, one, because it's not a mandate. What I've heard from my clients in the last several months have been, we've been doing this for a long time. The intermediate school districts are a really good example, like the service co-op, of shared services and joint purchasing efforts. The intermediate school districts, most of you may be more familiar with them, they provide high-cost special ed services and career and tech ed programs to their member districts who are members of the intermediates voluntarily. But a really good example of something else that intermediates do, Intermediate 916 currently has 16 joint purchasing contracts that they competitively bid and award for items such as office and classroom supplies, first aid supplies, physical ed supplies, maintenance, and furniture. And it's a really good example in maintenance supply bid. They had purchases of products of almost $800,000 with a savings of 20 to 35%. I would just like to, we support this legislation because it attempts to remove barriers, provide opportunities for those school districts that for whatever reason may not be doing as much joint purchasing or joint services as they could be. And it just allows districts to be ever more flexible to best serve their students and the needs of their, and be responsible to their taxpayers.
Great, thank you. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota, and I am very pleased to be with you today. I want to start out by complimenting these two authors here. I like to refer to them as the troublesome twosome. They had a really unique idea, and they started by listening to school districts to actually find out what was going on in shared services. And what a pleasure it was to be with two legislators who actually sat down, did the homework, found out what was going on, and decided to build on top of it. And for school districts, what a pleasure. And it's really in contrast to what's happening in the other bodies with us. And I just want to sort of compare and contrast a little bit between that. First of all, this bill does not pay an outside consultant who comes in and says, I'm going to save you 30% of your school district's budget, which is virtually impossible unless you're going to go into personnel. 85% of our budgets are employees. This does not take 5% of the savings away from your local school districts. It allows them to keep all their savings. And this is not another mandate. You know what? Great ideas have a life of themselves, and this is truly a great idea.
It is common sense. We fully support this. And once again, my compliments to both authors who really sort of took the bull by the horn, found a solution, and the state auditor who we've worked with before on many issues has been really interested in helping local governments work better. She's not very interested in being the front page of the newspaper, but really getting work done. And she is a perfect partner to move this forward for school districts. And in difficult times, we're going to need every piece of help we can find. And we think this kind of reform is what we need. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great, thank you. Questions from members? I've got a list started over here. We'll start with Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, but I'd like to start by thanking Representative Swales and Representative McFarland for their work. I served on a service cooperative board for 10 years, and when the shared services bill came out, the first thing I said is, this is already happening. And what I really appreciate about what you're doing is it's a way of sharing information with a light hand, recognizing the importance of oversight and direction while acknowledging the value of local initiative. The other thing is I'm really happy to hear service cooperatives talked about in another context other than the insurance pool, because service cooperatives are a model organization for shared services. That's what they've been doing for the last several decades, and there's a lot to be learned there, and I'm not saying that we can't improve, but I do think what you're doing is exactly offering the opportunity to see across organizations what those opportunities for improvement are. So thank you so much for your work.
Representative Adler.
Well, thanks, and I won't add, I was going to say half of what Representative Reiner said, but I don't need to repeat it. But it's really nice to have an alternative. I think the other proposal is just plain lousy and dangerous and harmful and bad. What do you really think? And it would hurt my district, I know, and all the ones I know of that I've ever met in the state. And so I'm glad we have an alternative rather than just saying no, and I think this gives us somewhere to go. And I do a question. The auditor, can they absorb this into their operations? Is there a fiscal note on this from the auditor? You know,
Representative Swell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I was on the phone yesterday afternoon with Rebecca Otto, who said, yes, there will be a fiscal note, but she's still interviewing the people in her IT area and a couple of other department folks that are at the auditor's office to see what they feel the expenses would be. So by the Finance Committee meeting, we will have that fiscal note. But in the meantime, we have had conversations last Monday. We met with the St. Paul Chamber and the leaders of that organization who are so excited about this. And we are feeling like between the St. Paul Chamber, we've been in discussions with the Humphrey Institute, that we will find the resources we need to help manage this system. It will take probably some staff time from the auditor's office, because it's a very secure site there, so they will have to have their own IT person initially set it up, and that's where the cost would come in.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer and I were not being teenagers. What's a wiki?
Representative McFarland is
an expert. Yeah, that's on record now.
Well, it's only hearsay about him. I'm admitting I don't know.
The first time I heard the phrase, I thought it was a character from Star Wars.
So we have aliens helping us?
Yeah. Here, I did explain it earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll listen to the tape.
I'll let you know about it. It's an interactive website.
You'll give him a tutorial.
You can tweet me about it.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I have a series of questions that hopefully won't take too long to answer. Why the state auditor as compared to, let's say, Department of Administration, which is doing a lot of this at the state level?
We had talked to a lot of the other departments. Originally, we thought about the Department of Education. We were really looking for a neutral site. We also feel that this could be expanded to other units of government. So if we put it under the Department of Ed, that might bind us and not let us expand to cities, townships, and counties. And already there was a best practices section of that the state auditor is already in charge of. And so when we went to House Research to ask to write up the bill, they found this section, and it seems to be fitting, and the state auditor is very excited, and she feels that this was in hers because she has to review all of those different units of government.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there, I appreciate that the opportunity to expand this through the state auditor to other units of local government. How does this kind of tie in with what's going on at Department of Administration with some of their procurements and shared service agreements? I mean, do we have the ability to actually extend this into state agencies? And maybe a related question to that is, one of the criticisms I've heard of the local purchasing cooperatives is that they really don't leverage the full purchasing power of the state, and some of the state contracts are far better than the local. So maybe just...
They already have the opportunity to use that system, and I don't know that everybody knows about it. And on this wiki site, there would be a connection to the state procurement plan, so people would know that as an option. That's one of the issues. Another issue that nobody knows what's out there already, and so we need to be able to market it, and that's one way to market those good ideas.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to also respond to that. When the state auditor was talking with us,
we believe that this is the beginning point. What we're trying to create is, from the bottom up, a network, so that as this site progresses, and the state or the Office of Administration would be linked, PIES would be linked, the service cooperatives would be linked, the nutrition purchasing group would be linked, so that school districts have a menu of places that they can go to see what's available. We're not mandating that they be, that they purchase from the Department of Administration. As we've talked to people from other service cooperatives, they are able to do better on some of the prices in the Department of Administration, even though that's very good. But we want to give the full menu, the full banquet table of the options that are available.
Is that good?
Yes, Representative Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anything statutorily that actually blocks school districts or local units of government from pursuing, for example, large-scale back-office consolidation or anything? I mean, statutorily, there's nothing else that we need to do to kind of enable this?
Mr. Chair, we did check into this because one of my big concerns was that I would hate to initiate something like this and find out that our statutes were in the way of this happening. And so we learned that our state is probably one of the most generous states about allowing joint partnerships and those kinds of activities, so joint powers agreements and things like that. So we don't feel it should be an obstacle. I just wanted to also, if I could, respond back to the part about the financing. I think one of the initiatives that we've learned about was when the Minnesota High Tech Association partnered about the Get STEM website initiative. I think there are some partnerships that we could develop with the business community or some foundations to possibly help to initiate this program. So it doesn't necessarily need to be state money. We're looking for those opportunities.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to ask either of the authors, without bringing any kind of controversy in here, just information, did either of you or both of you have conversations with Ed Minnesota, you know, the issue of the statewide insurance pool, that kind of thing? Could you speak about that at all, and whether Ed Min sees this as an alternative to the proposals they made in the past, which was so controversial?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, Ed Min was at every meeting that we held for the work group, and we have felt nothing but solid support from them in what we're trying to do. The area of insurance pools was not addressed during our meetings, but it is wonderful to find out that areas like Southwest Cooperative is have created their own insurance pool.
Can I add to that, too? The other thing is, through all of our hearings and through all communications we've had, we have always invited people to come to us and talk to us individually, too, about issues. And in fact, we're hoping that stakeholders will talk to us after today to give us more input, because that's how we build good legislation.
Just a quick follow-up.
Yeah, Representative Benson.
Since something like this is being done by the Southwest group, do you see this as a possibility, as an alternative? Is this proposal large enough to include something like purchasing health insurance for employees?
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I believe I would let the Southwest Cooperative speak for themselves, but obviously they are doing it. It is a model that I think other regions could look at. We, you know, this is not our area of expertise, and it is not one of the strands that we focus on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am very much in support of this bill, as well as my school district are, and thank you for Representative Benson for asking the question regarding the health care services. I think that was a good one. I wanted to read this quickly. An email that I did receive yesterday from one of my school districts. I've talked to all of them about it, and essentially said the site would be a place to post contracts that have been established as joint powers purchasing contracts, and would allow more districts to take advantage of competitive pricing that has already been negotiated. Creating the website might take a small amount of state resources, though, but would be a great resource for districts and would help districts save money. So, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I was just handed something by the school board administration, and it's a reminder to the committee that this is not a mandate, that participation with the wiki and the joint purchasing agreements or whatever is optional. It is not a mandate. So anything related to health insurance is being the bill related to that and admin is a mandate that all school districts.
Thank you. Any other further discussion from members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, one more
introduction. Absolutely.
There is a person in the audience who is from the southwest corner of the state by the name of Roger Moe, a former senator, and we want to thank him for attending the meeting last Friday. And at the end of the meeting, he did something that he probably has no idea how much it meant to the two of us, but he put us together in little huddles and pulled our heads in together and said, you two are an example of best practices of what a legislature should look like. And I would urge each member here to look into the faces of those that sit across the aisle and to find those commonalities where we can work together. We are in extraordinary times, and the two of us are living proof that bipartisanship can lead to friendship. And we would urge you to put down those partisan barriers and get talking and working together. And thank you, Senator Moe, for helping us with that.
Thank you. Representative Swales renews her motion that House File 1665 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Our next bill is House File 1630. Representative Kalin, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
It's my understanding that this is going to be laid over, so I will move that House File 1630 be recommended to pass and be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill.
Great.
Representative Kalin, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Before you or someone else moves the DE4 amendment, what I'd like to do is actually draw attention to House File 1630 is introduced. The bill before you is a bill to hopefully end the duplicative testing that's happening in our schools at great expense, and I think both in terms of financial expense as well as time expense. The bill before you, as introduced, is actually the assessment article from Representative Garofalo's bill representing the governor's proposal for education this year. And you'll see on line 1.19 of the bill is introduced, move to a more adaptive test for grades 3 through 8 starting in the 2010-11 school year. I think it's a very good move. And I think that it's, as Representative Swales just reminded us, that often good ideas happen because there are folks from both sides of the aisle coming to the table supporting them. And I think that this move to a more adaptive test as soon as we can in the 10-11 school year, I think should happen. And that's what the DE4 amendment will do a little bit more explicitly, and also I think lay some groundwork for defining what a computer adaptive test really should be, and to make sure the department is looking to end the duplication. With that, Mr. Chair, if we could entertain the DE4 amendment and put that on, I can speak to the amendment.
The chair moves the DE4 amendment. As is customary, we put it in the form that the author would like. So with that, I will move that this be passed and allowed to move forward. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. When I first expressed an interest in running for office the first time in late 2003, the superintendent for the North Branch schools, actually I think he was still the assistant superintendent at the time, with a strong background in special education, kind of sidled up to me and said, there's something I think you should know about what's happening in our schools today. The MCAs we're finding are very frustrating for us. They're taking a great deal of time. This was almost 6 years ago. I know some folks on this committee actually saw that either in the classroom or here at the legislature at the time. But he said, you know, the test is so poorly designed and does not meet the needs of our students from a day-to-day perspective that we actually spend, they're the lowest funded district in the state on a total funding for 6 of the last 7 years. And even given that restraint, they spend their own money, as I know, I think it's something like 60% of school districts around the state do now, spend their own money for a computer adaptive formative test that their vendor has been the NWEA, the Northwest Evaluation Association, and their own money to provide that feedback that teachers can really use. And the impact for me was brought home when a friend of mine who's taught in the classroom, he's now in the fifth grade classroom, taught for over 20 years, explained that when he looked at the data from his students at the NWEA results, measures of academic progress, after teaching for 20 years, he realized that this particular group of kids were not getting it. I think the subject was a reading comprehension issue. They really weren't getting it. And that his habits needed to change and his teaching approach needed to change. And over the weekend, he did some rigorous self-analysis, tried some new things out, and by Tuesday morning, he saw the light bulbs go off. And he saw real improvement and progress like he hadn't seen since his first couple years in teaching. And when the second round of the measures of academic progress were implemented in his classroom, he actually saw the data happen. I'm a big fan of testing. I think assessment is really critical. But it's got to be formative. It's got to be such that we're comparing students against each other longitudinally and judging their progress. And I also think, as Representative Swales reminded us, these are extraordinary times. And it's an idea that I have been working on for a little while, and with the help of Chair Mariani and Chair Dreiling and the governor's proposal, I think it's time to move ahead with ending this cycle of having two different tests and moving to a formative computer adaptive test, starting as the governor's proposed in grades 3 through 8 in the beginning of the 10-11 school year. Mr. Chair, I want to tell you what my bill does not do, even though it addresses the same section of law that your committee and Representative Greiling's committee will need to tackle. My committee does not address the math test conundrum. It does not address the standards, save for the alignment of standards to the computer adaptive test. What my bill proposes to do is to move the conversation pretty aggressively forward to a computer adaptive test and to ending the duplicative testing. I know that, as I said, that section of law, these ideas will need to get integrated in the end in the reforms that you propose and that hopefully the House and the governor endorse in the end. So walking through the DE4 amendment, Section 4, just establishes the computer adaptive, or Section 1, the DE4 Amendment Section 1, establishes the computer adaptive reading, math, and science assessments aligned with state standards, and then articulates that it will be only for grades 3 through 8, and that for the first round of this computer adaptive transformation. I will point out on page 3, deletion, the striking of existing language on 3.8 to 3.12 was in the governor's proposal. The effective date, of course, for that bifurcation from 3rd through 8th computer adaptive and leaving the high school test as they are will begin in the 10-11 school year. Section 2 provides good definitions of computer adaptive assessments, both fully adaptive, where currently the measures of academic progress does this. I want to emphasize that when I describe the measures of academic progress, they're one vendor that could meet the standard. We deliberately not drafted the amendments to require any particular vendor. But what we do know are qualities that have worked, that we've seen. I hope that all of you have seen either in your school districts or nearby the success. The fully adaptive assessment allows students to begin on grade level and then based on the answers, whether I always describe that a third grader might be able to end up answering all the questions correctly at an 11th grade level at the end of the exam. I don't know that actual end grade level is 100% accurate, but you can get challenged more and more and more. Someone with Representative Downey's mathematical skills might end up at grade 11 or 12 in the end in the third or fourth grade. The partially adaptive assessment describes a possible blended model or a hybrid model that that is being tested in some school districts and other states, where you have these adaptive, scalable questions, as well as uniform on grade level only questions that can be used to derive summative data. In other words, you might think of the summative data, the backwards looking data from an MCA, integrated into that same test. So we have one test with both longitudinal summative data as well as the formative data that can change with the individual's growth. On page 4, still in section 2, I'll point you to lines 4.13 to 4.29. The factors and the elements that we'd like to see in a computer adaptive test, where scores are immediately available and performance data is available within one day of the assessment, where the macro achievement and summary reports are available within 3 days, and this growth information for individual students is accessible. When I was door knocking my first campaign in the city of Wyoming in the Forest Lake School District, where they have used the measures of academic progress with great success, I actually found that I had to try to avoid talking about this proposal, because several times I'd be grabbed by the arm by a parent and dragged into the kitchen to sit down and go over the results from the measures of academic progress. I had many pictures of ice cream and lemonade at people's kitchen tables because the parents understood enough to ask questions. And I thought that was really engaging, that the parents really were engaged in the assessment and the evaluation of their students. It was a really powerful tool. We also, of course, want to be able to use the data at the elementary and middle school years to determine who needs intervention and to project student achievement in high school. And then, of course, there's the link to state academic standards. Section 3 on page 5 goes to this issue of duplicative testing. And originally in 2003-2004, I believe there's a Star Tribune article that I think it probably overstated the cost of the MCAs, but and the development of the MCA test. But using back-of-the-envelope math and knowing that at the time that the measures of academic progress cost $12 per child per test for the District of North Branch, at the time, and an overinflated possibly, but close to triple-digit number for the cost per child per test for the MCAs, including development and all the costs. The savings for the state, if we were to end that duplication, our back-of-the-envelope math was somewhere in the neighborhood of just short of $200 million for the biennium. Those numbers, it's not in a formal fiscal note, that's in the back-of-the-envelope, but even if it's in the tens of millions, not the hundreds of millions, or even in the single digits, it's something that we should consider, not only because of the fiscal implications, but also because we're improving learning in the classroom. That's the bill as amended, Mr. Chair, and with that, I stand for questions, knowing that you all have lived and breathed these issues, whether in the classroom or on these committees, and so look forward to the dialogue.
Thank you. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kalin, for bringing this forward. You might guess I would have a few questions.
Yes.
So, I do come from a district that has used NWEA testing for a number of years, and we're very strong supporters of the tool, and there are many in our district that would like to go to only one form of testing because of the complexity of the testing schedule and integrating the results and using them in meaningful ways. And so I'm very aware of those issues. But my first question to you is, have you visited with any testing directors or psychometricians about the issue of longitudinal data and how we move forward with those measures?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Reinert, I first want to thank you for your work on the assessment and growth models. In fact, one of the reasons I chose not to pursue this legislation last term was because of the good work that you were bringing forward. And so I see this as a means of continuing to drive that conversation forward together. I have spoken to assessment directors both in North Branch and in Chisago Lakes in my own district. Not on this specific proposal have I spoken to folks outside of my own school district, but I understand that that longitudinal data over the years, that there's great potential for having them to line up, but I think the question will be whether we can technically do it. There may be folks in the audience that can actually speak in greater detail to that, but we don't want to make such a radical shift that we lose the data from the MCAs over the years.
Representative Brenner?
A follow-up, Mr. Chair. And I recognize that that's an issue we have as a state anyway when we move from the MCA 1s to the MCA 2s, and now we'll be moving to the MCA 3s. That issue is there. But I think we have to involve all of those in our communities who have been working with this data to move carefully in a manner that we still have data tools that really serve our students in a strong manner. So while, again, I'll reiterate, I'm a strong supporter of computer adaptive and the NWEA model has served our district well, I nevertheless would ask you to please bring those experts to the table in consultation on this proposal.
Will do.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to pile on with Representative Reinert. I agree, a little different angle, but the same sort of thing. I appreciate also what you're trying to do. But it's kind of analogous to having, there's multiple different hammers that somebody can use in building something. There's hammers you use when you're working with metal, there are hammers that you use working with wood, and then if you're a carpenter and a professional, there are multiple hammers that they use. So why not just have one hammer and it's going to get everything done, right? Because there are differences. And I would submit that, as Representative Brainerd is talking about, testing is a very fine art, as well as something that is studied and is best practices in the department. I guess one question I have you worked with the department at all? They have testing experts. They work with putting these tests together. There's a method to the madness, if you will. And so I have multiple questions. Did you work with the department? Did you talk to them about where they're going and why they're going, number one? Number two, the time frame. Our understanding is they develop the assessments that we're using can take up to a couple of years by the time you refine and you have an effective 010 or 11. That's a pretty drastic and quick change in kind of an about face. And the third thing, again, I think there's a difference between the formative tests, which I think are assessments for how kids are doing a long period of time that teachers probably use on a regular daily basis, and then there's a summative that are intended to take a snapshot as to where we're at, and that's something that we use as policymakers as probably more as a snapshot. And I would submit that the summatives are not really teaching tools as an adaptive test is, but a summative is, you know, are we getting there? And so there's a number of questions I have in there, Mr. Chair. I guess number one is the time frame. Speak to that. Number two, did you work with the department and that sort of thing? And number three, those are my other things were just more comments, I guess. But I'm concerned about the time frame. What do you work with the department? And we'll go from there.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the time frame, the time frame is exactly the same as proposed by the governor and Representative Garofalo's bill, the 10-11, an adaptive test for the middle school years by 10 and 11. And so one of the reasons that that I had not brought the bill forward before this year, before today, actually, is partly because I, having
spoken to Representative Reinert and Representative Morrow, who expressed a great deal of interest as well. Actually, soon after we got elected, before we were even sworn in, we started talking about this issue. And watching that dialogue, I felt like it was that there was too much resistance or too much combative positioning, I think, from on both sides of this issue. The proposal brought forward by the governor made me feel like by bringing forward the bill that we could actually engage in that dialogue at this point. And I'm really looking forward to it, and I appreciate your thoughts on it. I do think it's a reasonable timeline. I do think that we can do it. To be honest, when I sat down with Ms. Larson and other staff and experts to describe my ideal, knowing that we have this tool, I would love to see us switch over for next school year. But that's the sort of change agent in me that sometimes you have to. I then have to let the designer in me say, you know, no, the building has to stand up. You have to have a foundation. The thing's got to work. I think this can work. Lastly, on the summative versus formative issue, you know, we have SCRED, Sinclair River Education District, that brought the response to intervention RTI model forward, and that's in my district. And so I've learned quite a bit from Chris McHugh and now Kim Givens there about both the formative and summative issue. I think that by blending them together, as we can see some results already from other school districts in a few months around the country, I think we might be able to actually save days of teaching time by blending them together and accomplishing both goals. Because I do believe you have to have both goals. I'm a little bit of a data geek, and so I know that if you can put the data together, you can actually start to extrapolate all those formative and longitudinal inclines that we need to be able to show.
I think now is a good time also to bring down the Department of Education as they have some comments on the bill as well. Welcome. If you'd please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Todd Wilkins from the Minnesota Department of Education in the Division of Research and Assessment. We only just received the amended language this morning, and so we haven't had a chance to do any in-depth review. We do have a few initial concerns. I think one overarching concern is the potential for some cost implications to the proposal, and certainly we can need to go into greater depth to be able to detail that out, but as a general concern, we are concerned that there would be cost implications. My colleague Jennifer Dugan from the department has some specific concerns related to some of the test development aspects of the issues.
State your name for the record.
Jennifer Dugan from the Division of Research and Assessment at the Department of Education. Under No Child Left Behind, we cannot have off-grade level testing when calculating AYP. So all test questions have to be aligned at that grade level for NCLB. Also, in the governor's proposal, the math was implemented in the 2010-2011 school year in grades 3 through 8. Science would be in 2011-12, and language arts would be in 12-13, so speaking to the implementation schedule. And a piece of that is that's when the implementation of the revised academic standards goes into place, so that it's in a thoughtful progression with the standards revision. And also, looking a little bit to the cost of currently all of our test questions are reviewed specifically by Minnesota teachers, taking into consideration the curriculum that are being used across the state, and then also looking at bias issues within the state specific to Minnesota. And purchasing an assessment that would be off the shelf, we would want to review those questions for that and then also align them with our standards from our perspective.
We have one question to the testimony there, Representative Briner, and then I've got a list of other questions too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't remember your name, so the testing person, tell me your name again.
Jennifer Dugan.
Okay, Ms. Dugan, I'll be more respectful, sorry. I'm wondering about the review process you're mentioning. Would that not be a process we could put in place with any vendor? I mean, as a, and it wouldn't be a matter of buying, because any vendor would have to adjust to our standards and meet the expectations of state statute. Is that not correct?
Mr. Dugan.
Yes, Chair and Representative. That is correct. Currently, that's part of our item development process. So from the very beginning of the test questions, we ensure that they are aligned with our academic standards and the benchmarks. And so it's not retrofitting, and we also ensure that there is content coverage across all of the benchmarks, where we may find that there are, in the off-the-shelf assessment, there might be holes at a particular grade level when looking at the standards that we would have to supplement as well, and then allow time for that in our process.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to thank Representative Kalin for finally bringing this forward. When I've discussed this with my superintendents, and I've discussed it with most of them, they've used this Northwest evaluation. For some reason, they always refer to it as the MAP test. I don't know. It's the same test, I guess. And they've said that the tests that they're required to give, that the state sends out, are a total waste of time and effort. They don't use them for anything other than light campfires, because by the time they get the information, it is so late, they can't change the curriculum to adjust to any changes or problems that it brought up, and they've already made those changes because the MAP test told them they needed to do that 6 months earlier. And so I think that it's about time that we do this. And my only concern is that, and reading through the amendment, I'm not sure how much control the commissioner still has on this. My concern is, in all due respect to the commissioner, is that by having too much control, the department might be able to mess it up and create the same problems with the test that we've currently got, instead of, and then the Northwest assessment wouldn't be any good either. So that's the biggest concern I have with this, is that getting the department involved with this test might mess it up. But otherwise, I think it's a great thing.
Representative Kalin, to the question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Faust. To that point, I go back and forth on that issue about prescriptiveness versus putting criteria out there and allowing the professionals to then develop the test. I think that the language you see on lines 4.13 to 4.29 describe the elements we'd like to see in any computer adaptive test that is formative, that allows for the feedback and the things, the benefits that your district and mine have described, and I know that others, I see Todd shaking his, or nodding his head as well, that I think that if we can be clear enough without being so prescriptive, I know that in the past there's been session law or statutory language adopted to try to steer towards a specific vendor, and sometimes just out of either stubbornness or a belief that there's another route to go, that departments will do what they need to do to get away from that channeling towards that. I do want to address, Mr. Chair, the concern about cost. I think if members read through Section 3 explicitly, I understand the concern, but I also believe that if we're going to be developing what may be known as the MCA 3, as I believe the governor's proposal gets us towards, we want to make sure that we're developing a test that does maximize cost efficiency and effectiveness across the board. And I think you'll even see that there online on page 6 at the top of concern, I heard from Representative Dabney from his teaching years about the technology and capacity of our districts to be able to do either online or on district mainframes, and that some of the cost savings should be used to alleviate those concerns as well.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate all the questions. I had a lot of those same questions and concerns with this, but I want to go in a different direction. Lines 4.13 through 4.29, and then roughly 5.27 through the end of the DE4 amendment appear to me to be kind of a capabilities brochure for a vendor or set of vendors, and I don't understand the testing vendor community, but could you describe for me why those very precise, almost feature function sets of testing vendors appear to be in the bill and the merits for those?
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, serving on state government finance together and addressing these issues in other areas, I'm not, I actually anticipated that you'd ask about that. The criteria, especially I'll just point to the page 4 criteria, are criteria that I've heard anecdotally and seen in terms of analytically that are really critical to having a formative test work and be able to fully inform and provide the appropriate feedback to teachers on the ground and to parents, as well as then school administrators, to be able to do the intervention and do the make the changes necessary to improve learning. I think that we can continue to work on, and I hope this committee will ultimately advance this proposal, and I trust that the committee will tweak as needed and as necessary in a thoughtful way to make sure that we are not being vendor specific, but actually talking about the attributes that a computer adaptive test needs to have to be successful.
I believe our testifier would like to comment on that as well.
Mr. Chair, yeah, the department shares the concern that was expressed by Representative that this language may be prescriptive in terms of only allowing for a very small number of vendors to be able to respond. We want to make sure that we're following standard request for proposal processes, and we're going to need to be sure that we consult with the Department of Administration to be sure that this language would be consistent with the standard practices.
Thank Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question dealt with the technology piece, and I think that he's addressed that. Thank you.
Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just two questions for you. The first, I think, is pretty easy, is whether there are really going to be enough computers in all of our schools to handle this computer adaptive testing. And the second one is more towards, and I don't know if you have an answer to the computer question, maybe nobody does at this point, but it's my understanding you're trying to displace the NCAs, make this the model of testing we do, but I'm, having read through the bill, I'm concerned that this bill as it is written now would still give the department the ability to add these on as a requirement as opposed to displace the NCAs, and if you could address that and how that's the case, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll deal with the easy question first. Representative Obermiller, I just spoke with Bill Gates about 2 minutes before coming here. He's assured me that we'll have enough computers. That's a joke. Just want to make sure nobody actually thinks that happened. But it is a concern, and that's one reason why why it's addressed on page 6 of the DE4 amendment. But I think that actually goes to then your second concern, that same language about eliminating the duplication of testing. My concern is I want to make sure that we're not following a path that leads us down a dead end, which trying to take a summative test and embrace computer adaptivity without actually going all the way and may end up being too much of a square peg in a round hole. And just take two metaphors and mix them together. But I have that concern and would like to talk to you more in depth about how we can make sure that we're not allowing that to happen, that we're using the 21st century tools to inform 21st century teaching.
Representative McFarland. And if we could keep our comments somewhat short, because we do have just a few minutes, and we have somebody else who would like to speak today. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the department wanted to respond to that last one, so I'll first ask a question of the department. Do you know how many districts are currently using these computer adaptive systems, such as NWEA, right now?
Oh, I don't know that I have a figure on that. I heard someone quote that roughly 300 districts of our 500-and-some districts in the state are using the NWEA test, but that's an anecdotal quote, not a specific statistic. Okay.
And my second question would be for Representative Kalin, Mr. Chair. this seems to be expanding on the governor's proposal. Has a fiscal note been requested on this?
Representative Taylor?
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, we will, I assume that the chairs will be requesting a fiscal note. We wanted to make sure we had the language and an amendment adopted by this committee before asking for that fiscal note.
Representative McFarland?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my next question would be, are you willing to work with the department on this language?
Representative Taylor?
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, appreciate the softball. Yes. Absolutely.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We do have a request from a citizen in the audience to offer us some testimony, not on this bill, but kind of on some bigger issues, and I did provide an opportunity for her to do that. We're only 5 minutes left in the committee. And so what I want to do, we're going to be laying this over, Mr. Chair and members, what I want to do is, I think there's been a series of excellent questions raised here. I want to encourage Representative Kalin, and the time frame is going to be a little bit short, certainly by next Wednesday, to work with the department on some language issues here. I think this question that Representative Downey and others have raised about, perhaps tipping heavily prescriptive language that may create some kind of a conflict here, I think we need to be serious about addressing that issue if, in fact, that's the case. And it would be this chair's intention, then, that we bring this issue back off the table as we construct the omnibus bill next week. And so my hope is that a good amount of work can happen between now and then with Representative Kalin, with the department, and then members here who may be willing to engage with Representative Kalin. We, of course, will be vetting particularly many of the cost issues once, assuming we act favorably once the bill moves on to recall finance. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would encourage us to go ahead and lay the bill over for now and then ask our citizen to come forward. She's asked to share a few minutes with us about the importance of approaching policy in K-12 education based on the importance of diversity. And I think of all the committees in the legislature, this is certainly one that needs to be very mindful of that. As Representative Newton shared at the very beginning of our session back in January, there are no sectors as diverse as K-12, as the K-12 sector in our society. So with that, Mr. Chair, I...
Thank you. As we move towards that testimony, I would renew my motion that House File 1630 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Betty Allison Harpel. If you just state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to share this information with you. I'm Betty Allison Harpel. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I would like to share some information with you and make some suggestions to you. First, I'd like to suggest that you stop using the words, the buzzwords, learning ready. Children are born learning ready. We cannot prevent a child from learning. We control what they learn and how they learn. I've never seen a child in my life who was not born learning ready. Even children with special needs, they are learning ready. They learn something. I heard at a meeting that one of your standards was that children needed to have a vocabulary of 1,000 words in order to be ready for kindergarten. Well, first I want to know, how do you monitor this? And wouldn't it take you a whole year to monitor this one child, just do 1,000 words to screen this child? And who would help you to know whether a number 345 word was the same as number 15? So I think the people who make those standards first need to have some training in early childhood education. I had it in Piaget when there were only four English translations, and they weren't complete English translations. They put a French word right in the middle, because if they translated the French word to the English, it would become a phrase and they'd have to restructure their sentence. I also had physiology, and I learned the development stages of children and people in general. I saw a brochure that you promote that said a child had to know how to bounce a ball in order to be ready for kindergarten. That's maturation and small and large development of the muscles. Development of small and large muscles. Our African American children are failing in Minneapolis. It is serious. We have children who are not doing well. Something is wrong. Teaching is not teaching until a child learns. You might have lectured or shared some information, but until that child learns, you have not taught. Mrs. Peterson, I'm not blaming teachers per se, but I'm saying there are some teachers, and I blame the university, really, because I call them recipe teachers. And what I mean by that is the recipe calls for one cup of sugar. And because the teacher has not understood what the sugar does to the consistency of the ingredients, and the teacher does not have the cup of sugar, the teacher does not know that maybe you can substitute it for some honey or some syrup and still get the same sweetness in your ingredients. But if you don't understand what it does to the consistency of your ingredients, you do not know how to transpose or substitute. That's what I mean by recipe teachers. I'm not blaming the teachers. I'm blaming the university for not teaching the teachers these variances. Also, I suggested years ago to the school board in Minneapolis about what I call a one-third, one-third, one-third staffing in every school. One-third neophyte teachers with young, new ideas and plenty of energy in life. One-third middle-level teachers who offer the stability of a school. And one-third of senior teachers that offer the true, tried, and trusted ways in every school. Many of our inner city schools are staffed by neophyte teachers. And then when they get their tenure, they move on to other schools. I'm trying to see. I think I've covered most of the things that we need. Better trainers of teachers in early childhood. It's more than glorified babysitting. It's building the foundation of a house. If you build a sturdy, firm basement, you can put a $500 house or a $5 million house on it. But if it's shabby, you're constantly patching it up. I think I've covered most of it.
I thank you very much for being here, and as an educator as well as a neophyte politician, I will tell you that your concerns are our concerns, and I thank you so much for being here. I hope that we can continue this dialogue as we look towards what this session brings and the foundation that we want to create for our children. So I know that the representatives here, we are over our committee time right now, but if there are any other concerns that you would like to address with us individually, we'd love to have that opportunity. Thank you, and we stand adjourned.